Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and today my guest is one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, Richard Hall, who I affectionately call Pops. Today he's going to share some of his stories about the early days of the Tuskegee Airmen. But let me give you a little definition about the Tuskegee Airmen. The Tuskegee Airmen is the popular name of a group of African-American military fighters and bombers who fought in World War II, formerly formed the 32nd Fighter Group and the 477th Bombardment Group of the United States Army Air Force. The name also applies to navigators, mechanics, instructors, crew chiefs, nurses, cooks, and other support personnel for the pilots. So, if you now would allow me to introduce you to my guest, Richard Hall. Hello, Pops. How are you?
Oh, Cassandra, fine, and you?
I am doing great. I am so honored to have you on today. And before we get started, you're getting ready to celebrate your 91st birthday coming up soon?
92nd birthday.
Oh, my. I'm sorry. You will be 92 in August, is it?
In September, the 25th.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I want to say happy birthday early to you. That is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So you retired. You were in the, well, it started off to be the Army Air Force. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then it went on to be later on named the, because my father was in the Army Air Force also, and you were stationed at Chinook Air Force Base, and you were a mechanic, is that correct?
Yes, and armor, and several other positions through the years.
What are some of your other positions?
Well, I was a flight engineer at one time, a loadmaster at one time, and aircraft armor.
My. And you said to me that you were also a chief master sergeant, and you were explaining to me that to be assigned a chief master sergeant, that is 1% of all the air forces, all the services? Explain that to me.
Yes, when they organize and 1958, there's a bill introduced through Congress that 1%, a 2% of all services could be promoted to grade of senior master sergeant. And then 1% of that same group could be promoted to chief master sergeant, which is E9. And I was fortunate enough to be promoted on the first go around.
Oh.
So I was promoted to senior master sergeant in 58. And in 59, I was promoted to chief master sergeant.
Oh. And where were you stationed when this happened?
I was stationed in Chinook Air Force Base in Illinois.
Okay, you were at Chinook in Rantoul, which is my hometown, which is where I was, and you knew me as a little girl. And the mechanics, the Tuskegee mechanics were there from 1941 to 1943. Now, were you there during those years?
Well, I went to maintenance school in 43.
Okay.
Aircraft maintenance.
Okay, so you worked on the airplanes that the Tuskegee Airmen, the pilots, flew.
Right. The 47s, Raptor ones. And then later on, we got B-25, the bombers.
Wow. Well, now, was it an exciting time for you then? Did you realize the importance of what the Tuskegee pilots were doing and what you were doing as a mechanic?
It was exciting, but frightening at the time.
But the prejudices, the different things, can you give us some of your encounters of prejudices that you knew way back then, that you were involved in?
Well, when I was in maintenance school, they had separate barracks, first living, and of course, so the classrooms were together, black and white, but separate buildings.
Okay. And how were the pilots? How did the pilots treat the black pilots?
Not very well.
Right. Well, they wouldn't even speak to them, is that right?
And couldn't be saluted either.
They wouldn't, the white soldiers would not salute the black officers. Well, now that's insubordination, isn't it?
Yes, that's true.
Were there any charges ever brought against them for not doing that, honoring your superior?
I don't recall any.
Oh, wow. And what about
the
mechanics?
I'm going to tell you something about, you see, after World War II, they let everybody take a 90-day leave, that 101, and so I came home, which is in Florida. And so while I was on my 90-day leave, I was told not to report to Garland Field, Kentucky, which is a southern state, a southern area, to report to Columbus, Ohio. And I didn't find out what happened down at Garland Field, Kentucky, until I got to Ohio. And then the people told me that they got in trouble. They wouldn't let the officers in the officers' club. And Shappy James was one of our pilots. He was a second lieutenant, I think, at that time. Well, he later made his four-star general when he retired.
Yeah, Chappy
but
James.
At that time, Chappy James.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm familiar with Chappy James.
Yeah. Well, we used to fly together in B-25s. I was a flight engineer at that time.
Oh.
But anyway, when I came to Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, they told me what happened down in Garland Field, Kentucky. And you see, Lockman Air Force Base in Ohio had been closed after the war. And so they reopened it for us because we could be on a base by ourselves. It would create a problem. So I have a picture of the entire wing in my home. All the nurses, all of the pilots, all the support personnel is on this picture. I had never counted, but the picture is about 3 or 4 feet long.
And that's the one that's in your hallway on the your wall, right?
Right.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that picture. And so what did Chappy James do when he heard about that incident?
Well, what happened, they put him in jail in Garland Field, Kentucky. But anyway, when I let him out, then moved out to Columbus, Ohio. Then they put us on a base by ourselves. Blacks.
This was in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, that's where we went when we left Garland Field, Kentucky. But I was never at Garland Field. I was on a 90-day leave. Pardon? So they had to find a base where they could put us on by ourselves. And that base has been closed, the Lockburn. It's now called Rickenback Air Force Base. It's named after the famous pilot from Ohio, Rickenback, World War I ace.
Okay. Wow. Oh, my. And so not only were the services separate, we couldn't sleep in the same barracks, they even had a whole entire base just for the blacks.
Yeah, for this particular outfit, the Tuskegee Airmen. Yeah.
Oh my! I didn't know that part. And that, and my research showed that there was 996 original Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah, well,
did you know?
After it became a wing. Yeah, after it became a wing. See, while we were overseas, only had three squadrons: the 99th, the 100th, and the 301st.
Okay.
The fighter squadron. So when the war was over, they deactivated the 101st. And then we had three bomb squadrons up in Michigan, which were all black. But they never saw combat at that time. And they had B-25s. So when the war was over, they deactivated two of the bomb squadrons. They kept 617, which had B-25s. So I was assigned 617. Then they made it a composite group. And that consisted of the 99 and 617 bomb squadron. The 99 had fighters and 617 had bomb, B-25s. They called that a composite group. It remained that way from 46 until 47, I think. And that's when they activated the wing, the 332nd.
Okay. Now, did you have anything to do with painting the tails red? Did they do that at Chanute?
No, they did that.
That was in Europe?
When I joined the Tuskegee Airmen, they had red tails on the fighters.
So that would have been out of Europe?
Yeah. Before they went to Europe, I guess. Somewhere, it happened sometime in Europe. They just saw the tails red. That's why we have red coats and red caps now.
And so are you still very active with the Tuskegee Airmen, the chapters?
Oh, yeah, we meet once. The chapter I belong to here in Florida is named after Chapter James, since he was from Florida.
Okay.
He's from Pensacola. So I belong to that chapter here in Florida. And incidentally, there's only three of us originals still living in this chapter in Florida. Yeah, there's one in a nursing home. And there's one lives over near Winter God and myself.
Okay, in Florida.
Original.
I'll be a rich. Now, do you go see them? Or
oh, yeah,
we meet
once a quarter, sir. We meet once a quarter on International Drive.
Okay.
Now, we've added people to a chapter, in order to keep it alive. Because, like, I'm on in my 90s. And there's another guy over, I think he's a year older than I am.
Okay.
It's the one of God who's the original. So, and this chapter's on the sphere of the original. Oh, yeah, one of our instructors from Tuskegee, he's still alive.
One of your instructors?
He's Caucasian, John. Yeah.
Is that right? Well, does he ever come? He's Caucasian, but does he ever, not but.
Oh, yeah, he's active in the same chapter I'm in, because he's relocated to Florida.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you remember him as an instructor?
No.
Oh, you did? Okay.
He can't wait off my time. No.
Oh, okay. Well, then you went to Washington, though, in 2007 when Bush awarded the Tuskegee Airmen the Congressional Gold Medal. Is that correct? There were 300 of you. 300 of you attended that ceremony.
I think so. There's quite a few. Because I saw some people I hadn't seen since World War II. I didn't. He called me. Oh, how are you doing? And I didn't recognize the people. It's been a long time since 45. You know who I am? I tried to, and they kept talking, and then it came back to them who they were.
Oh, my goodness.
So I guess I looked the same, enough for them to identify who I was.
Exactly. I'm sure when the last time, which I saw you probably about, I think it was about three and a half years ago, is when the last time Janice and I were down there. And
right.
Which is all of this stuff I have mentioned in my book, Stars in the Sky, and I mentioned the history. Yeah, you're going to have to read that, Pop.
I'm going to get that book. Yeah.
I'm going to make sure you get a copy. I'm going to send you a copy.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I mentioned the Tuskegee Airmen and, you know, Chanute, because Chanute is it's history. That's good history.
Yeah, because that's where I first went to maintenance school in Chanute in 44, somewhere back then.
Exactly.
And we lived in separate barracks, in the same classroom.
Living in separate barracks. Well, as we know, everything was separate, as you just said to us. They had separate, a whole separate base, which I've never known that before.
Yeah, that's why they moved us out of Governor Fields in Tucker. But, you know, Tucker's a southern state, and they had all kind of problems. But I know the station there. They just told me not to report to Kentucky, but report to Columbus, Ohio.
Oh.
I had no idea what was going on until I got to Ohio. Then they told me what happened.
Wow. I tell you, well, this was the history of it. And isn't it a shame that it took so long for the Tuskegee Airmen to be recognized? And one of the things that I just found out, and I mentioned it in my book, that I just think is really sad, is that James H. Harvey III was the first one to win the inaugural Top Gun Award in 1949. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was not even acknowledged till almost 50 years later.
Right. I think they were trying to let all of us die first before we got the Congressional Medal. But what they did, I think they gave it to the widows of the one that were dead.
Okay.
So I heard.
Okay. But you have yours.
I have mine, yes.
I didn't see that, Pops, when I was down there.
Well,
where do you have that display?
It's in the dining room, sitting on the buffet in my dining room. I have that along with the other medals that I received during my time of service.
What a joy. What a joy.
Yeah, I received the all the basic medals, you know. Never got a purple heart.
And you have a purple heart?
I'm fortunate. I never got injured that much.
You never got injured, but you...
No. Thankful.
Tell us that story.
But you know, with that mobile training outfit, as you know, I had a chance to travel completely around the globe. Did you hear about the mobile training unit there? She knew it was in operation while you were there, I think.
The training?
Mobile training. They call it mobile training.
I don't know. Tell us what the mobile train is.
The mobile training unit. We had detachments for each system in the airplane, and we traveled all around the world. And most of my time was spent in South America. We go down and spend, I come home, you know, about every couple of weeks or so. And I guess while you had done your time, because I went to South America several times. And what happened, this was a program where we had all these old airplanes after World War II. Most of them were parked down in Texas, where it was National Drive. And somebody in Washington says, hey, we should do some of these old airplanes. They're all, you know, we wasn't using them anymore. They reciprocate that type of engine. And then we're going to the jetties, and somebody got the idea, said, let's give them to our friends. You know, at that time, everybody's our friend now, especially down South America.
Okay.
And so I went to every country in South America. And so we go down and you see what they did, they mounted all the components of the airplane on wheels so you could move it in and out of a C-119 aircraft. We call them the flying boxcars. Mm-hmm. And like I had the engine, and it was a cutaway, and see, it was mounted on four wheels, and I could take it in and out off of C-119 and set up in a classroom. And I had an interpreter. I could point out the different systems in the engine.
Oh.
Fuel system, blocks and all. each one of our technicians, the navigator people, at the same time. The communication people had the radios and everything, mounted the same way, cutaways so you could explain each system. And in my case, the case of each system in the airplane, on the aircraft engine, which is like something like an automobile, pistons, rings, things like this.
Okay.
Cutaways, and I could explain to the students, the petition, that I had an interpreter, because most people spoke Spanish. So I got a chance to go to most of the countries in South America. Now, that's why I was in Chinook, because that's what about people. That's Chinook for, I guess, years. Because I was about 8 years altogether there. Yeah. 8 or 9 years.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think about what years were you around at Chinook?
We got there in 1960. Daddy retired. 1960.
Yeah. You see, I went to Vietnam in 1961. Yeah, I went from Chinook to Vietnam in 1961.
Okay. I think I remember that. I remember you being gone. As a child, I didn't really.
I was gone quite a few times.
I know. No, Pops, you were always. I know you were gone. You were back. You were gone. You were back. So yes, I remember those days.
Yeah, I was going down South America all that time and back. I was able to come back quite often. So, and incidentally, that mobile training outfit. It has special authorizations here to go overseas, called South America overseas, and you stay 2 or 3 months to get a new return date. And somebody in Washington found this out, and they stopped that shortly after my getting transferred out of that outfit, the mobile training outfit.
Why did they stop it?
Well, they lost control of us, see. See, Washington wanted to control the assignments, overseas assignments. We were exempted from that. We controlled our own overseas assignments. Mobile training, you know, the owner, outfit, and whole Air Force had to discard it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. I never knew that situation.
Well, they didn't advertise it, see.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, what difficulties did you have on the mobile trains with the people? Because people, you still had the racial issues, right?
Yeah. Well, my hardest deal there was being away from my family, because it was quite small at that time, you know. But I was able to come back because I had on an airplane, so I'd come back on weekends, you know. There was no racial issues there, I don't think, other than. People treat us very nice down in South America.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We're teaching them how to maintain the airplanes that they were going to receive. See, we had to go in first to teach them how to maintain the airplane. Then they send the pilots down to teach them how to fly them.
Oh. But this would be all pilots. It wouldn't just be the black pilots, would it? Is it all pilots?
Yeah. Same thing on the mobile training outfit. That was a mix, too. Because the session was all along. It was mixed.
Okay, so we're now talking in the 60s and 70s, or what?
I was in the 60s, I guess, 70s.
In the 60s, okay. Yes, but so the conditions were a lot better than they used to be. And plus, at that point...
Well, they integrated in 49. So.
Yes.
That's when they integrated in 1949. Incidentally, what happened to me, Colonel Davis has all in his ear one day. He says he's going to deactivate this outfit. And you're going to end up in the four corners of the world, where the Air Force is located. And I said, and I ended on Okinawa. Eight of us went to Okinawa. The Pittsburgh fighter.
Okay.
And we had not been promoted. And so the first go-around, they promoted once a year at that time. All eight of us got promoted.
Yeah.
And everybody concerned, you just got here, you know. They don't know we had been murdered since the war.
Exactly.
One person received a promotion His name was Hall, Lieutenant Hall, same as mine.
Okay.
And he came out of West Point. So that promotion came directly from the Pentagon to the 332nd.
Oh.
He was assigned to the 9th Air Force, which is in South Carolina. Ring a bell?
Yeah.
Well, the 332nd did not get any promotions during that whole time until they integrated. That's when we got our first promotion. Only except that one, Lieutenant Hall. He got promoted from second lieutenant to first lieutenant.
Okay.
And that came directly out of Pentagon. Didn't go through South Carolina. Not Air Force.
Where we had all that trouble before, I'm sure that they weren't interested in trying to make sure anybody got promoted.
Yeah, because that was going on. Nobody got promoted except Lieutenant Hall. And that,
exactly.
And he came out of West Point. He got promoted from second lieutenant to first lieutenant. Because everybody saw the Hall as well as me. And there's one other Hall. Yeah, there's another Hall on that base, too. In fact, he was Colonel Benjamin Davis' chauffeur.
Did you have very many dealings with Benjamin, with Colonel Benjamin O. Davis Jr.?
Yeah, he's my wing commander.
Did you know
the
senior?
Yeah, he's my wing commander. Yeah, Colonel Davis. He's our wing commander.
Oh yeah. Well, what about the senior though? Did you know him?
No, my dad knew him. See, my dad went to Tuskegee when I was in high school.
Oh.
Yeah. That's why I heard Tuskegee all my life.
Oh, you have. You are. You were very familiar about it. Okay.
I was in Tuskegee in 1914 to 1918. I went to high school.
And,
okay. So when he graduated, he said his senior year, they furnished some officers from Tuskegee. At that time, didn't have to be college grads, I guess, to become an officer. And he said something that Benjamin Davis' daddy was there at that time, his father.
Yes.
Yeah. He was at Tuskegee when my dad was there as a student, between 1914 and 1918. Yeah.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. That's a new thing.
I took my dad back out there a few years later, and he says, what's the farm? I said, oh, the buildings are. See, when he was there, it was a farm.
Yes, all farm area.
Well, see, that's how the president got the money to build Tuskegee. He's going to teach these black people how to farm, how to count, and he convinced them that it'd be beneficial for them if they could read and write. And so that's how you got the finances built, Tuskegee.
Oh.
Have you ever been to Tuskegee?
Yes. As a matter of fact,
your home is still standing. It made a little museum out of it. Yeah, it's still standing. It made a little museum out of it. In fact, an airplane right close to it, a P-46, a P-47, like the one we had, the first one that we had. It's mighty close to it, you can see it. Yeah.
Oh, well, I did go down there, and I saw the airstrip, and were you familiar, or are you familiar?
Did you see the airplane that was mounted on the campus?
Yes.
Yeah, it's close to the president's home, because they made a museum out of that home.
Okay.
Booker T's home, you
know. Okay, well, are you familiar with Alice Coachman, who was the first African-American to win a gold medal in track?
Yeah.
Okay, that was my cousin.
Oh, it was? Oh, yeah? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
that was my cousin. She just...
Yeah, see, Jesse Owens ran track. Went to Germany. That same year, at 100-yard dash, I was only 2 seconds short, slower than he was. That's when I was young.
Oh, you know you can run that fast now, Pop.
I was just 2 seconds. Shorter than Jesse Owens. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's why I can't walk now.
Oh, bad knees?
Legs and all. ankles.
Oh my goodness. And so what made you join the Air Force then, the service? Were you
made
you
me join? They have, you ever heard of this thing they call a draft?
Yeah, Pop.
Huh?
You know, yeah, that was a funny question. But, you know, there's so many of my audience that don't know anything about the draft because we haven't had a draft since, the 70s, right?
That's right. You know, the first draft was the years between 21 to 31. That was the first draft.
Okay.
And that was 1940 or something like that. You know, I didn't worry about the trip. You know, I was, 17, something like that. Because I came out of high school, I'd have been 18 that September because I came out at the age of 17. And so I don't worry about the draft. 21 to 31? I said, this will all be over before I get old enough to go to service. But then they moved it from 18 to 45. That took everything to walk, see? From the year of 18 years old to the year of 1945.
Oh.
That's a lot of people.
They were taking everybody. Yes,
yeah,
you're right.
To walk.
That's right. Oh, my.
So I was at Xavier at the time in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And so his sister told me, said, now, Mr. Hall says, no, we can protect you if you join the reserve. This means the draft. Incidentally, the draft board required them to notify them every 30 days if I was in school and if I was passing.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's kind of hard for them to do that. And so finally they said, now, if you join the reserve, we can protect you, see. This means that the draft board back in Warren Park won't have any ties to you. And see, there's only three black boys going to college that year. And I guess they prefer that we go someplace else, like to the service, rather than to college. But anyway, they persuaded me, so the three was joined the reserve. But you know, it stayed for a couple of years. They didn't touch us.
Right, they didn't touch you because you were in school.
No, I was still in school. But I had to join the reserve. If they joined the reserve, they'd have had me over, got me the first year because the draft was 18 to 45.
Wow.
So I turned 18.
Wow. So you were a part of that history, that back in the days. So you went around then, you know, just kind of going back to what you were saying about the mobile train. So you went around and were, that's what you did for your, after you were the mechanic at Chanute. And at that point, so that was getting, so when you did that, that was at the end, well, the war was over by then, right?
Oh, yeah, the war was over at that time now. This is on peace
time. Exactly, peacetime. Yeah, so how was it, though, in the later years when the Tuskegee, they never gave the Tuskegee Airmen any credit for all that they had done.
Oh, no.
But the word of mouth is you guys knew. You knew how brave the soldiers were back in those days. But how with the white people, the officers and everything, how did they respond? They never gave you any accolades or anything for being the Tuskegee Airmen brave deeds?
Not that I can recall. I don't recall anything until they come with a gold medal. And I know that this congressman from New York, he's working on it. In fact, I met him when I went to Washington. He told me how hard he worked on it to get this medal authorized and how long he'd been working on it in order to get it authorized.
Mm-hmm.
He made a statement, well, they're trying to wait till all you guys died off. And a lot of them had passed, too, at that time.
And then he actually said that?
No, what's the name? The representative from Washington, from New York. What's the guy's name? Congressman. Mm. Representative. From New York.
I'm drawing a blank also, because we're talking back in 2007, right?
Hmm?
I said, we're talking back in 2007.
Right.
Exactly. So,
in fact, he's still in Congress now. He's
okay.
Getting up in age. What was his name?
But that was, but yeah, but he didn't get his wish, or the people who wanted that to happen didn't, because as you said, there were at least original, there were three originals. Is that correct? Did you say there were three at the congressional gold medal ceremony?
Oh, there were quite a few originals. I'm talking about in my chapter here. There's only three of us.
Okay. Well, how many originals?
The chapter here in Florida. Pardon?
Okay. Okay. How many originals made it to D.C.? In 2007, because all 300, were they all the originals? Because I know they have so many chapters, but the 300
that
was it.
Yeah, the originals. Now I have a deal that I wear around my neck when I wear my red coat that identified me as being an original. Original document, they call it. Yeah.
Oh. Is it a bomber's jacket or is it just a regular suit jacket?
No, I have a red jacket. But I have a deal I wear around my neck that says I'm an original documentary.
And I've never seen that. And I've been to several affairs with the Tuskegee Airmen. There was one here in Chicago. His name was William Bill Thomas. I think I have that correct.
Thomas. Oh, Thomas.
Did you know
Thomas
him?
I know several Thomases, but I don't know which one that one is.
Exactly.
Thomas is kind of like Hall.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes. But I used to talk to him years ago. He's passed, but I believe he was one of the originals, but he was in Chicago. So.
Yeah, what did he look like?
He had blue eyes. And
oh, really? Mexican?
Yeah, he was fair. And, Bill Thomas, I believe, was his name. And
Bill
he used to tell
Thomas?
Me, yes.
Well, he should have been a picture I have in, if it was in 47. You know, long picture I have in my hallway.
Exactly. Do you have all the names on those?
No.
Are the names
on those? No, I wouldn't have the name. There's too many.
too many. But, yeah, he was quite interesting. I used to go over and look at all the different artifacts. I saw his original orders, and he would tell me the different stories of the combat and, you know, the planes coming back with, you know, bullet holes in them and things like that. He was interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like that name sounds familiar, Thomas. You know, as you get older, your memory gets a little short.
Well, I think you've earned that right. If you're going to be 92, I think that you have definitely earned that right. And some things, you know what, Pops, you don't even want to remember.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
Some things we don't want to remember.
Yeah.
Because I know the Tuskegee Airmen. And that was another thing, as I had said, too, that did you remember or did you know James H. Harvey? Did you know him?
Yeah, Harvey. I know several Harveys.
Well, he was the first one to win the Top Gun. You remember when that happened?
Yeah, I heard the name for him. Yeah, there's several guys that won the Top Gun. I'm trying to think of the names of them all. I can't.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It would have been a team of them. Yes. Well, he finally has been recognized after 50 years later. He finally was recognized for that, yes, because the government, the U.S. Air Force, did not recognize that team that won the Top Gun.
Right, right. You know, we used to, when I went to Myrtle Beach one time, they put us on a base by ourselves. Myrtle Beach had been closed, and so they sent us a detachment of us down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This must have been 48, I believe, from Lockbourne. And Myrtle Beach, that base had been closed since World War II. So the barracks gave me, I was first sergeant headquarters for at that time, and said, "Oh, you put your people in this building over here." And I looked at the building, I couldn't see it, but the bushes grew up all around it.
Oh, wow.
Because it had been vacant all them years, you know, since World War II.
Yes.
And see, the idea of the locator was there, so we fly missions over the Gulf of Mexico. And so the first couple of weeks we spent getting the place livable, getting all the bushes cut down, ran all the snakes out of the building.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
This is South Carolina.
Yes, snakes. Oh, yeah, thanks,
Pop. Yeah, the base has been closed for you since World War II.
Yes.
And so it's a small base, so they put us on that base so we could participate in Operation Combine 3. And the idea of that mission was to fly over the Gulf of Mexico and fly tow targets over the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
And so we got all lined up and buildings all cleared out and all snakes are away and got my squad set up in the headquarters squad set up in the barracks and all. And then we proceeded to get the runway together. Had grown up too. Had to get that cut on, the bushes and stuff cut on and all that sort of thing. So we got rolling about, I guess about, I must have been about 30 days after we landed. The strip was still usable, so we were able to land on the strip. Then we had to fly from there over to Warner Robins, pick up our bombs. Now we were on the bombs there, and fly to Warner Robins, and then fly south to Mexico. Well, the first time we started flying over the state of Georgia, and fly at low altitude, and a lot of these guys were from the state of Georgia. And see, we on it over there at Myrtle Beach. And somebody found out that we were flying live ammunition over the state of Georgia. We had to fly over to Warner Robins, load, arm, then fly south to Mexico, right down between the Georgia state line and the Alabama line. If you know where the base is in Georgia, Lawson Air Force Base, that's near a big army base that's been there for years since World War One.
Okay.
But they built an airstrip called Lawson Air Force Base. We'd fly over there and load our bombs and then fly south to Gulf of Mexico between the state of Georgia and Alabama. That's to keep them flying over the state of Georgia.
Oh, my. But everyone, that was not just a restriction for the black pilot. That was for every pilot there was.
Well, we were all black.
Well, right. But anybody, I mean, did they have any white pilots that would fly?
Oh, no. This is all Tuskegee Airmen. This Operation Combine 3 is all black pilots and black aircraft. And black crew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was added fuel, added time, and they just wanted you to fly over the unincorporated area so that you would not accidentally lose the bomb over there.
I'm going to tell you what some of the guys said. One guy, see, a lot of guys were from the state of Georgia. The guy said, you see that big White House down there at that altitude? He said, I could blow that to King and Kong. Wouldn't touch them with Shannon out around us. You know, I started saying, now, some of them guys are crazy enough to do this. But anyway, we survived. So we fly to Lawson Air Force Base and load our bombs and fuse them, bomb out over the Gulf of Mexico and drop our bombs against tow targets and all this sort of thing. It was a practice session where it was.
Okay. Practice.
Operation Combine 3, they call it. Button?
Do you think that, and this is what I stated in my book, that the Tuskegee pilots were so efficient in doing what they were doing? Is it because of under the leadership of Chappie? Do you feel that it was just because of all the other things that they all had to prove that they were better and definitely that we could do the job? What do you think the inspiration was in us being able to do above and beyond job of protecting those pilots during World War?
I think we figured we had to be better to be recognized. We had to be better.
Yes.
And Colonel Davis installed that in us. You know, he's out of West Point. And, you know, he ran that base just like West Point.
Oh, did he?
The one that put us on by ourselves.
Like
just like West Point. If three people walked on the base, if they're going anywhere, the barber shops or the pigs, if three people walk together, the two in front walk in step, and the third walk right behind in step.
Is that right?
Just going to the commissary or to the PX or to the barber shop. And there was never a piece of paper found on that base anywhere. Like people threw a cigarette butt or something like that. That didn't happen on at that base. He ran just like West Point.
Wow.
And he was, believe it or not, in the summertime, when he wore the khaki uniform, he'd go home for lunch. Where you sit behind his desk, you get wrinkles behind your legs, you know. He would change his pants when he went home for lunch.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, he
presentation.
West Point. And he ran that business like West Point.
Wow. And so that,
there's
you
no
think
strolling.
That was the beginning.
You can walk across on the grass. You get Article 15. You walked on the sidewalk. In step.
In step.
And incidentally, you see, it's 3 inches in front and 6 inches in the rear. When you're showing your hands, yeah, 3 inches in front and 6 inches in the rear when you walk.
Wow.
Chest out, stomach in. In step.
In step. Well, I tell you, he did a great job because that was part of why Tuskegee Airmen, the Red Tails, have such a wonderful reputation and did such a miraculous job because under the leadership of Benjamin O. Davis.
Oh, yeah, he was tough. And he had his staff call was out of draft, O.D., and they'd ride around on the base. He was sitting in the back end of his chauffeur. His name was Hall also. And he's driving around over the base. He'd look, see if anybody is. Just like West Point.
Wow.
The guy just called Lockburn, that's Little West Point.
Oh, my. Well, he knew what he was doing. Now, his father went to West Point also, didn't he?
No.
Senior didn't go to West Point?
No.
David Jr. went.
Yeah,
so
Jesse's
son went to West Point.
Son,
yeah.
I knew where he went to school. I heard my dad tell him about where he went to school. Because, see, he was Tuskegee when my dad was there.
Yeah.
See, dad went to 1914 to 1918. See, that before Davis was born, Benjamin Lowe Jr.
Yes. Boy, that's a legacy, I tell you. Well, I tell you, you know, you've seen an awful lot, Pops, and you've been through a lot. You did 30 years and 12 days, and you just told me the 12 days.
It would pay for 12 days.
And you did not get paid for the last 12 days of your military career.
No, because of the regulation. No matter what day you end the service, you're on a discharge on the end of the month. No, what day you end the service doesn't count. You're discharged at the end of the month. Yeah.
So 30 years and 12 days, and the 12 days, and you'll never forget that, dude, will you? The 12 days you didn't get paid for. The 12 days you didn't get paid for. And so now you're in Florida. You are enjoying your life. As I said, and you, as you told us, you will be 92 in September.
Yes.
And you're in good health. Your memory is wonderful. I've enjoyed listening to the stories, and I'm hoping that my audience has learned a few things and gathered a few facts that they've never known before, because you sure enlightened me on some things. And I tell you, we always, Pops was Pops. We didn't know you were a Tuskegee Airman.
Oh. Well, I didn't advertise so much at the time. During you're growing up, huh? At Rantoul?
Yeah, in Rantoul.
You know, one time I was only Janice and Cookie and Janice's brother.
Charles.
I think the first to attend that high school in Rantoul.
Yeah.
Then you came later on.
Yes.
What year did you come to Rantoul?
in 1960. We were in, Daddy had been stationed in Tripoli in North Africa, Tripoli, yeah. Libya, North Africa. And yeah, so we came from Africa.
Yeah, later years when I was stationed in Germany, you know, it was cold in Germany, so we go down to Libya to fly in the wintertime.
Oh. So you had been in Libya also?
Did you ever see them, grand, the golf courses with the sand grains down at Libya?
I don't remember
golf
that.
They had golf courses down there.
Yes. Yes, because Daddy and my brother, my father played golf, and Daddy and my brother was his caddy. Yes, I do remember.
You remember the sand greens? They watered them down and try to put the ball, and it just jumps all over the place.
Oh, boy. I tell you,
the flying conditions are bad up in Germany in the wintertime, so we go down there to trip to the TDY in the summer, in the wintertime.
Uh-huh.
We fly out of that area. And so I had the privilege of playing on that sand green one time, trying to put the ball.
That was interesting. Well, Pop, I tell you, this has been a wonderful, wonderful interview, and our time is almost up. Can you believe that?
All right. It's been enjoyable talking with you, and when you come to sunny Florida, look me up.
I will be there. I will be there in May, so I will call you
and let you know. Very good.
I'm
trying to get Jess to relocate down here, too.
I know it, and she just might. She just might. Janice is mentioned in my book also. So, Pop, I'm going to say thank you so much for an interview, and
thank
I will
you
talk
privilege.
To you. You are so welcome. It's my honor to have an original Tuskegee Airman. So, with that, Pops, I will say goodbye to you.
Okay, and goodbye to you, and be good.
Okay, thank you. I will. Thank you. And for my audience, bye-bye. And for my audience, I'd like to say this has been very exciting to me to interview a person that I've known my whole life. And he's so humble and so sharp, and at 92, he's still running races. But I want to say I hope that you enjoyed the show today. I hope that you will tune in next week when I will have another exciting guest. Remember, my show is on every Wednesday at 11 Central Time. And please tell your family, tell your friends to join in. Call in with a comment. I'd love to hear from everyone. This is the Fly Girl Show. Our calling number is 347-857-3609. Once again, my call-in number is 347-857-3609. I am your host, Casey Grant, and I look forward to seeing you next week. And remember, as I always like to tell my audience, remember that your blessings are as numerous as the stars in the sky. Have a pleasant day, and we will see you next week. Please tune in, 11 Central Standard Time on the Fly Girl Show.